Good afternoon from the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Cormery. Thank you for tuning in. A magnitude 7 earthquake shook Juneau and other towns in Alaska's northern and central panhandle late Saturday morning. According to the Alaska Earthquake Center, the quake happened at 11:41 a.m. and was centered roughly 55 miles north of Yakutat, at a depth of about 3 miles. Residents from Juneau, Haines, Whitehorse, and other southeast Alaska towns reported houses shaking briefly. There were no immediate reports of any damage. The National Weather Service Juneau says there is no tsunami danger from the earthquake. Juneau saw a snowfall record during a winter storm over the weekend, and now freezing temperatures and clear skies are expected to stretch through most of the week. Juneau received 13.6 inches of snow this past weekend, measured at the airport. Most of it, 9.6 inches, fell on Saturday, December 6th, breaking the record for that day in history. The previous record for December 6th was 7.2 inches, set in 1975. Nathan Compton is a meteorologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau.
It was a fairly common setup for a heavy snow pattern in Juneau.
He says the winter storm was caused by cold, dry air flowing south from the interior Canada and then moving under warmer, moist air traveling north, turning what would have been rain into snow.
That cold air came down from Lynn Canal and just undercut everything. And right when that happens, that's when we get the maximum lift. And so on Saturday, that's why we got those very, very, very heavy snow rates, like right at the beginning of the event.
Elsewhere in the region, the heavy snow and wind caused the Klondike Highway to close over the weekend. And the Leconte Ferry scheduled to leave Skagway Sunday was canceled. That stranded the Juneau Douglas High School Yeraakahle Nordic ski team in Whitehorse after a ski trip. Abby McAllister is the lead ski coach for the team, but wasn't on the trip. She says 16 students and their coaches stayed an extra night in their Airbnb. And they're driving to Haines, where they'll stay overnight at the high school there and then board the Columbia Ferry early in the morning. Instead of coming home Sunday night, the team is expected back Tuesday. McAllister says that the kids know how to go with the flow.
But, you know, it's Alaska, and these are Alaska kids, and they've just been all positive with the twists and turns.
Now that the dry, cold air from the north has mostly wrung out the moist clouds hanging over Juneau, sunshine and low temperatures, from the single digits to the teens, are expected to take hold through Friday. And after more than a century, a Tlingit clan will once again be the legal owners of a raven helmet worn during the Battle of Sitka in 1804. Non-Native organizations have claimed ownership of the helmet for more than 100 years and kept it in a museum in Sitka. More than 200 years ago, Tlingit and other Alaska Native people waged battles against invading and oppressive Russian colonists in Sitka. To this day, those battles are a symbol of Tlingit resistance to colonialism. A Kiksadi warrior named Kachlian led the attacks, and in 1904, he wore a carved raven helmet during one of the battles. In the early 1900s, the helmet was separated from the Kiksadi. It's considered Ot-U, a sacred living clan item, but the raven helmet has been behind glass at the Sheldon Jackson Museum since 1906. Anya Nach Ray Wilson is a Kiksadi clan leader and lives in Juneau. He says that Ot-U holds spirits, and clan members treat them like relatives.
So when we don't have our items, we can't use them. And there it is sitting right in the museum in Sitka, and we can't use it. And it belongs to us. So it's really hard to accept.
Wilson is 92, and he says that the colonial legacy of the last two centuries have left Tlingit people with only pieces of their history and cultural practices. But when they bring Ot-U back into ceremonies, those items help restore what has been lost.
The main thing is that it's coming back to help our people. We all need help, you know. We need the culture to come back to make our people stronger again.
According to recorded history, this is how the Raven Helmet ended up in the Sheldon Jackson Museum. Three Kiksadi men brought it to Alaska's territorial governor, John Brady. Brady co-founded the Presbyterian-run Sitka Industrial and Training School, which is now known as Sheldon Jackson College. The helmet has been in the campus museum since. The state bought the museum and its collection in the 1980s. But for years, Kiksadi leaders have said that that isn't how sacred clan items are given away. They're under cultural patrimony, which means all clan members own the item, and no individual can give away sacred clan objects without the clan's approval. So for decades, the Kiksadi have been trying to get the helmet back from the state, arguing that it was not ever the state's property. And last month, the Alaska State Museum finally agreed to start the process of returning ownership to the Kiksadi. Clan member Dutin Jarek Hope Lang has been fighting to repatriate the helmet just like his grandmother did two decades before. He said the process involved digging into the history of how the helmet changed hands.
If you're asserting you have the right to anything, there must be proof. I want to see it.
The written records claiming ownership start with the Presbyterian Church, which ran the Sitka Industrial and Training School. Then the Alaska State Museums bought the school's museum and its collection in the 1980s. Hope Lang reached out to Jermaine Roth Alam. He's the director of the Presbyterian Church's Center for Repair of Historical Harms and was instrumental in the fight to repatriate the helmet. He says since the handover of the helmet to the Presbyterians didn't follow proper protocols, the church never had a right to the helmet in the first place. Therefore, the church didn't have the right of possession when it sold the helmet as part of the museum's collections to the state decades later. Roth Alam hopes righting the wrongs of the past inspires others to do the same, even if it feels like it's too late.
That should give people confidence to continue to engage in more acts of repair and solidarity, no matter how big the repair job seems to be.
Now, Hope Lang looks forward to a future when the helmet will always be in Kiksati hands. He says the knowledge of clan ownership makes a difference.
It changes the narrative. When you go in and you look at this piece, you're not saying it belongs to somebody else, it belongs to you.
He says young clan members won't know the pain of not being able to claim it and to use it for ceremony.
And the exciting thing is for the young people below us who will become the caretakers, the future ancestors, that they won't know this trauma. This won't be passed on to them.
The Alaska State Museums said there are still several steps before the repatriation process is complete. And the National Marine Fisheries Service has reopened public comment on President Donald Trump's executive order on restoring American seafood competitiveness. According to the Fisheries Service announcement, this time the agency is specifically looking for input on fishing regulations that could be suspended, revised, or rescinded. Other areas include how to make fisheries management and science more effective, modernized, and cheaper. The Fisheries Service said it received nearly 700 comments during the initial comment period that closed on October 14th. Those public comments are not publicly available online. That comment period partially overlapped with the federal government's shutdown. The Fisheries Service says the reopening was, quote, appropriate due to the lapse in appropriations that occurred during the comment period, end quote. The agency says it plans to use public comments to identify specific actions it can take to revitalize the U.S. seafood sector. Comments will be accepted until 8 p.m. on December 15th. To submit comments, go online to the NOAA Fisheries website. And as for the weather here in Juneau today, it's 16 degrees. In fact, there is a cold weather advisory in effect from midnight tonight until noon tomorrow. There could be wind chill temperatures as low as 15 below. The snow looks like it'll taper off before 9 p.m., though. The rest of this week looks very cold, with temperatures in the single digits and sunshine. And we have a correction for the story we ran on Friday about electrifying the proposed Cascade Point ferry terminal. The state funds will pay for engineering of the submarine cable, not the cable itself. And a state forester helped Alaska Desk reporter Alonia Niden harvest her Christmas tree in the Matanuska Valley last week and shared how you can, too.
Last year, I had a fiasco. My friends and I drove out and cut down a Christmas tree. It looked perfect, and I was excited to decorate it in our living room. But the tree lost nearly all of its needles. By Christmas Day, the thin tree trunk with sad, sagging branches stood completely naked. A thick layer of green needles pulled on the floor around it. I show Stephen Nickel a photo.
Oh yeah, that happens.
Nickel is a forester with the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. This year, I asked for his help. Nickel and I are at the Moose Range near Palmer. It's one of several established places to find a Christmas tree on state land in South Central Alaska. Other spots are on the Kenai Peninsula. You just need to consult the maps on the Division of Forestry website. You can also cut a tree anywhere on unrestricted state land. And there are options at the Jim Creek Recreation Area, as well as Chugach National Forest. Nickel says the legal window for cutting is from Thanksgiving through Christmas Day. General rules are
one tree per household, less than 15 feet tall. We want folks to cut the tree all the way down to the ground, and then just, you know, clean up after yourself.
There are a ton of Christmas tree candidates here, mainly white and black spruce. Equipped with a handsaw, a shovel, and some ropes to carry out the tree, we trudge through melty snow and fallen branches.
Sometimes you'll find little tracks where people have already walked off in the woods, like, hey, maybe there's another spot over there, maybe there's another tree, let's go check it out.
Picking the right Christmas tree is all about foliage. Nickel says to look for healthy green needles to make sure the tree will last. And
envision the space that you're trying to fill with the tree and pick the tree to find that.
If it's a centerpiece of the room, he says to look for full, even foliage, typical for trees without close neighbors. If you want a tree against the wall, maybe pick one that has fewer branches on one side. We see one charming spruce tree, but it is a little too short. Another one looks tall and full, and we decide it might be a great candidate.
You ready to cut it?
Let's do it.
All right.
Then Nickel notices an issue. Yellow speckles on the needles that might indicate that the tree is not healthy.
I might want to point you towards something that's got a little bit more green on it, just so you don't have, you know, lose a bunch of needles.
So we keep walking until we see the one.
Oh, this one is probably white spruce, right?
Yeah, looks a little bit greener than the other one.
Yeah, I like this one.
All right.
I get on my knees and crawl to get closer to the trunk.
Just like that.
It's easy to cut with a sharp handsaw. Just make sure you cut on the side opposite of where you want the tree to fall.
Okay, it's about to fall.
Yeah, it's all right. There you go.
My Christmas tree!
Yes.
Oh, it's a nice one. I think I picked well. The needles will stay on.
We take a short walk back. Nickel says to be careful when you put the tree in or on your car. The branches might be brittle, especially when it's cold outside. Then, when you bring the tree home, Nickel says to leave it in a semi-warm space. That will allow the tree branches to relax before you bring it inside. For now, mine is in a garage, warming up. I'll bring it into my living room soon to decorate it and enjoy its lush green branches. I hope it will last at least through Christmas. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naiden.
This is KTOO.